Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. War moves and all eyes on the economy this week. President Obama ordered 30,000 more troops to Afghanistan after months of deliberation. He made the case grim-faced at West Point.
If I did not think that the security of the United States and the safety of the American people were at stake in Afghanistan, I would gladly order every single one of our troops home tomorrow.
The buildup drew critics, but so did a July 2011 target to draw down. Here's Senator John McCain.
It's hard to get the total commitment of your friends and allies in the region if they think you're not staying.
And Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke was on the hot seat as he looked for a second term. Senator Jim Bunning of Kentucky was scathing in hearings.
You put the printing presses into overdrive to fund the government spending and hand out cheap money to your masters on Wall Street, which they use to rake in record profits while ordinary Americans and small businesses can't even get loans.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. How's the Afghan plan settling in with you? What do you see in Obama's Rubicon in the U.S. economy? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Jonathan Martin, senior political writer for Politico. Jonathan, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
From Philadelphia, we're joined by Trudy Rubin, foreign affairs columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's recently returned from 3 weeks in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Trudy, welcome back to you as well.
Nice to be here.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine, joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Jonathan, and Trudy.
Let's get a little more sound off the Afghanistan decision. Big, big announcement by the president this week, long anticipated during all that deliberation. General Stanley McChrystal was right at the heart of pushing for more troops. Here he was on Wednesday talking with U.S. commanders in Afghanistan, saying the most important thing coalition forces will do under the new strategy is train Afghan troops.
At the end of the day, Afghanistan must be defended by Afghans. And that's what we will build with enabling the Afghans to do that over the coming months and years.
In an interview yesterday with the AP, Afghan President Hamid Karzai praised the new plan and beginning to draw down an 18-month, the deadline.
It's good that we are facing a deadline. We must begin to stand on our own feet.
Stand on our own feet. And here's Robert Gates saying, well, okay, but we'll look at the strategy as we go. When pressed on that 18-month deadline that President Obama articulated, there's some wiggle room.
We will have a thorough review in December 2010. If it appears that the strategy's not working and that we are not going to be able to transition in 2011, then we will take a hard look at the strategy itself.
Trudy Rubin, how are you feeling this decision settle in at the end of this week? That was a very, very somber speech the president gave before those cadets at West Point. You know, 30,000 more U.S. troops will go. Inevitably, some will not come back. It's a heavy, heavy burden he faced as he looked out on those young faces.
Well, having come back from 3 weeks in the area, I think that it was the right decision to send the troops. But what worries me is that putting the finite deadline on it may make it less possible to meet that deadline than if you hinted at it but didn't set it. Because what the real goal of this is, and General McChrystal would be the first one to say it, it's not a military solution. You can't have a military solution. McChrystal is trying to shift the momentum from this point where everyone thinks the Taliban are winning to a point where Afghans don't think such a victory is inevitable and may be willing to fight more themselves. And this just doesn't mean the Afghan army, which is unlikely to carry the main burden, but more local defense forces. And it also means shifting the mentality to a point where the Pakistanis decide that it's in their own interest not to keep holding on to the Afghan Taliban as a card, the Afghan Taliban whose leader is based in Pakistan, and the Pakistani military not sure what's going to happen in Afghanistan. They're holding on to that card. They are old allies with the Afghan Taliban. They don't want to let go of them until they're sure they're not going to win. And so by setting this deadline, I'm hearing from people in the region that it gives the impression we want to get out soon, and that's going to have the reverse effect from what Obama is hoping and may make it less likely that we can achieve what he hopes in those 18 months.
But without some of that, Trudy, how does anybody get the Afghans to step up and take over, which at some point they clearly must?
The issue is not so much take over. First of all, where they're going to take over, where it matters that they take over, is more at the local level. You want tribal militias, village self-defense forces, and you can see the beginnings of that happening, I think. I spent a couple of days in the province of Wardak, which was really infested with Taliban. You couldn't drive on the roads. They were full of IEDs. There's still IEDs, but the Taliban have moved back, and you see a burst of economic activity. And now you see Afghan self-defense forces because they have something to defend, like new roads, like new businesses. And I think that's what McChrystal's hope is. You push the Taliban out, economic activity comes in, locals have something to defend. But then the key point is, in the region, you have to have a political strategy. And what McChrystal is hoping for is that at that point you can wean away lower and mid-level Taliban, many of whom are in it for jobs, and possibly, if you get the cooperation of the Pakistanis, even break off some of the bigger Taliban leaders, get them to break with al-Qaeda and come into a political process with Afghan political leaders, which is what Karzai says he wants. You're aiming for a political solution. It's not going to be the Afghan National Army taking over the fight. And in order to get that political solution, you have to create the belief in the region that a Taliban victory is not inevitable.
Jonathan Martin, what about the belief in Washington, on Capitol Hill? How do you see the president's announcement settling in there?
Well, he's being squeezed on both sides because what you have is a very liberal base in his own party, which is recoiling at the notion of spending billions more dollars and sending more American troops into harm's way for what, in their eyes, is a very uncertain strategy that is predicated on a government that is widely seen as corrupt in Afghanistan. So you've got some, otherwise supportive allies of this president in his own caucus in the House and Senate that are speaking out against the strategy, that are, you know, saying very candidly that they have real concerns about more troops going over there. Just to give you an example, how this is playing out, not just in Washington, but politically. I was in Boston this week covering the Senate campaign to replace Ted Kennedy, and the four Democrats running in that primary to replace Senator Kennedy all came out against sending more troops into Afghanistan, opposing the policy of their own Democratic president. So I think that gives you some idea. Conversely, the Republicans and a few of the more hawkish Democrats say, look, this is not a good policy to have a deadline for when troops are going to come home. You can't really commit to, you know, victory when you're saying you're going to have a date certain for withdrawal. So this president is taking flak from the usual suspects, i.e. the Republicans, but also his own base. So he's in a very tough spot.
Here's one Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher of California, who found the approach just too similar to what's been done already.
It just seems to me that we've got the same policy that has not worked, with perhaps a few more troops, perhaps some more money, but basically the same strategy that has not worked.
Jack Beatty, I just keep thinking of those cadets at West Point as the president spoke, row upon row. I mean, here are strong, smart young people ready to do whatever they're ordered to do. Many of them, no doubt, will go to Afghanistan. Of the 30,000 troops going, we know some will not come back. These are heavy, heavy decisions the president is making, and you could see it on his face that night.
You could, and, he campaigned on this, on making, you know, Afghanistan was the good war as opposed to the blunder in Iraq. I had hoped, I think many people had hoped, that he would have shifted his position. Look what's happened in the meantime. We had an election stolen by the president of Afghanistan in front of the whole world. Delegitimizing the vestigial legitimacy that remained in his government, banishing it. you had, you know, the ambassador in Afghanistan, a former general, saying, don't send the troops because that'll just reinforce failure. That'll just induce the Afghan government to do nothing, to sit back and count its drug money. And then you had the president seeing dead soldiers going to Dover Air Base and keeping that vigil and seeing those coffins and talking to wounded veterans and seeing people talking to families. And I guess I had hoped that somehow that would begin to prevail on him and that we wouldn't get this decision. I mean, it was a muddled speech. It's a muddled policy for muddling through. This is not what we expected from a, quote, transformative president.
And yet, he says there is a dire threat there to U.S. national security. His justification we heard at the top. If I didn't have to do this, I would bring them all home. But we must. We must, he says, Jim.
Well, yeah, I know. But, you know, this is, I think, the fundamental myopia or illusion of this policy, that somehow terrorism is located in a place, Afghanistan. As Senator Specter said the other day, you know, if terrorists can strike and plot in Hamburg and in Somalia and elsewhere, why are we reinforcing, why are we made drawing the line in Afghanistan?
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about a week in the news, an Afghanistan surge announced by the President Ben Bernanke in the hot seat. Jobs news out today and a struggle for jobs through the Jobs Summit and elsewhere. There was another attack in Rawalpindi, Pakistan, just in the last 24 hours. What was supposed to be a secure military zone there, just one in a string of attacks inside military and secure Pakistani locations. Here's just a bit of sound from that scene today at the mosque near military facilities in Rawalpindi. Jonathan Martin's with us from Politico, Trudy Rubin from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and Jack Beatty. Trudy, this is unsettling to see yet again an attack right near the heart of Pakistan's security center.
Well, I think this speaks to one of the reasons why I believe it is in our security interest to have a surge, but surge has to be part of a political strategy, as I said. And that's because of Pakistan, which does have nuclear weapons and does have terrorists in it and is the base for al-Qaeda and is the base for the Afghan Taliban. And all of the Taliban and al-Qaeda, Pakistani Taliban, Afghan Taliban, al-Qaeda, are now knit together in sort of a big cancerous metastasized ball. And what this attack says is that the Pakistani military has finally taken on the Pakistani Taliban, who were committed to destabilizing and, if they could, taking over the Pakistani state. After a long time of reluctance and denial, the Pakistani military is now going after their Taliban in South Waziristan, close to the Afghan border. And these are revenge attacks. So the key here is getting us and the Pakistani military on the same page. In theory, you would think we have the same interests, but they are unwilling at this point to take on the Afghan Taliban because, as I said, they're not committed. They don't think we're committed. They don't think we know what we're doing in Afghanistan. And so they're holding on to the Afghan Taliban as a card. We have sent emissaries there, Leon Panetta from the CIA, James Jones, National Security Advisor, asking them, please go after those Afghan Taliban whose headquarters is right across the border from where we're going to be putting in more troops. And so far, Pakistan has said no. Mm. And I think, you know, this is a critical element because if the Afghan Taliban would take over in that country or would take large swaths along the border of Pakistan, it would blow back into Pakistan. It would strengthen their jihadis. It would also strengthen the jihadi cause around the world if the Afghan Taliban drove out NATO. So we are looking at a situation where you could have a blowback into a country with nuclear weapons.
A lot of skepticism on Capitol Hill, Trudy. I've got a little tape here from New Jersey. Senator Bob Menendez, Democrat, at the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing yesterday, looking at funds and the Pakistanis.
They don't seem to want a strategic relationship. They want the money. They want the equipment. But at the end of the day, they don't want a relationship that costs them too much. And it seems to me the more we build up our troops in Afghanistan, the more reliant we become on the Pakistanis for, in a variety of ways. So I just don't get the sense at this point in time of a comprehensive policy that says that I should vote for billions of dollars more to send our sons and daughters in harm's way in a way that we will ultimately succeed in our national security goals. I hope I can be convinced before that vote comes. But as of right now, I'm not.
Skepticism right there from Senator Menendez. Let's hear from our listeners, Margo in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Margo, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to make a brief comment that obviously the 30,000 extra troops being sent are being sent because of the concern about Pakistan. Because we can't fix Afghanistan, we could send 100,000 more troops and we couldn't fix it. But we need to be there in case the Pakistani government falls. And it might. You know, I think the situation there is precarious enough that that could happen.
That sounds like a pretty big threat. We've read just recently again about the vulnerability potentially of nuclear weapons there. Let me get one more if I may. Thank you, Margo. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, you're on the air.
I am totally for the surge, and I'm absolutely for getting the troops out of there as soon as possible. I find it comical. Hello?
Hello, Carl. You're on.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you. I find it comical when Republicans get on air and find a television, a mic to get in front of and say, well, this is the same old strategy, when I beg to differ. They didn't have a strategy. They were just mucking along. And then I believe a decade is long enough to be in a war. We can't afford to be there for a decade. So I'm all for getting in there, getting the job done, and getting the heck up out of there.
Go in hard and get out. And one more, if I may, and we'll come to you. Judy in Concord, Massachusetts. Judy, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Tom, and
yes.
Hello to your guests. I and my husband my husband is a Vietnam veteran, and he's also a West Point graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched President Obama this week, like many of you who are listening to, as well as all of you there on the program. And we felt just so sad. We can't, you know, to the arguments that are being made that there's no comparison between Vietnam and Afghanistan and Pakistan, that area, it's not, it's so similar, because we are saying, oh, it's dire if these governments fail. There were nuclear weapons in the Soviet Union, and North Vietnam did end up taking over. And yet we've lost thousands upon thousands of our men, and now we are losing thousands of men and women in these wars, starting with Iraq in almost 20 years ago. And I would like to have a comment, and you know, and I can you know, take it offline, or you can
let's hear it.
Guest can. And that is, when are we going to stop having a war president? When are we going to try to solve our problems on this planet, which right now a very serious one is global climate change, and in our own country, jobs, green jobs? When are we going to address these issues instead of being mired in war? That is my question.
Judy, we've got it. And Trudy, yes?
I'm going to jump in there, too.
Yes, yes.
First of all, I think the Vietnam comparison is wrong. There have been less than 1,000 Americans lost in Afghanistan, which is a serious thing, but there's no comparison to Vietnam. There is no Soviet Union behind the Taliban. However, what you must focus on is that the Taliban hosted al-Qaeda, which did attack us. That attack came from Afghanistan. And if the United States is simply driven out of Afghanistan with NATO, I think you will have an inspiration for jihadis around the world that will be tremendous. Pakistan is in turmoil, and there is a risk that that state could be eaten from within by terrorists who want to get their hands from nukes. These are real threats.
No, you may be right, but your fellow citizen right there is flat out disagreeing. Joe Biden hasn't seemed to be very strong on that front as well. I want to take
Joe Biden was wrong on Iraq, too. He was against the Iraq surge, said it would never work, and it worked to a certain extent that he never imagined. He thought the country should be split into three pieces, which would have been a disaster.
Jonathan Martin, how do you see the politics evolving here? of this.
Well, I was so struck by that caller because it really illuminates the unease among a vocal element of President Obama's base that is wondering about the man that they elected last year. Now, what's fascinating also, I think, is that this is a president who has said himself that he represents whatever the sort of hopes, dreams, and aspirations that his supporters sort of thatched onto him. And oftentimes, I think some of his liberal followers viewed him as more of a dove than he actually is. But in defense of this president, you know, he never campaigned on withdrawing from Afghanistan. Just the opposite. He talked about focusing on Afghanistan and portraying it as the right war, as the just war, unlike his view of Iraq. But I think you're seeing a lot of disillusioned liberals right now because they thought we've waited so long to have one of our own in the White House. You know, President Clinton was more of a DLC moderate, but now we've got somebody that's really one of ours. And here he is escalating a war. And you heard that in your caller talking about when are we not going to have a war president? Well, I think that they're going to have one here for at least two more years.
Jack, I want to come to you on this issue of the other demands on the country and its treasury right now. But let me get one more call here. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
I'm sorry. I'm in. Your phone is failing on us here. Let's see. Let's get another from Steve in Providence, Rhode Island, if we can. Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm wondering if your commentators could react to whether, in a sense, actually McChrystal is on a short leash here. In other words, that this is not a carte blanche. The notion Gates yesterday amplified a bit on in both his morning news shows and on the, you know, the testimony before the Senate, that, you know, about a year from now, this December, you know, 2010 reevaluation, that if this isn't working, we reserve the right, in a sense, to conceive something wholly new. In other words, that McChrystal, rather than being given a blank check, is really being told, okay, we'll buy your theory that a few, you know, that these more troops will help, but you need to, the proof needs to be in the pudding and very rapidly, or there's some other thing here that could be a pullback from that, maybe even just, okay, we've given our best shot at Afghanistan. We're now going to pull out.
Go the other way. Gates has been kind of ambiguous on this. If I may, I want to turn to you, Jack. You've been waiting there. I mean, this is an interesting point. Short leash on McChrystal or not, Secretary Gates also, you know, making it clear things could go on here. And for that matter, Jack, short leash on the Democrats. They are facing midterm elections, unemployment down just a titch today, but, you know, they've got real problems on the domestic front while we look at the war abroad.
Oh, they certainly do. And on the leash business, you know, Howard Feinman made a very interesting statement the other day on MSNBC, and it was that this deadline is also a signal to the generals. Do not flood me with, you know, further demands for escalation. In other words, let's not replay General Westmoreland in Vietnam, who would get his increment of troops, and then 6 months later would say, I need some more, and I need some more. It was a way of putting, in fact, putting McChrystal and the rest of them on a leash, that there's a way of saying there's an end on this. It may not be 2011, but there is an end on this. And this redemptive strategy that somehow in 10 years we could reclaim Afghanistan if we followed the McChrystal plan, that's a non-starter. I think the president is trying to I really think that's a signal to McChrystal and to the generals, hold back on the leaks.
Trudy, a short leash blow by the deadline?
McChrystal knows that. If you read the report he sent to the president, if you talk to McChrystal, they know they are not looking for more troops. They want a political end to this. But McChrystal has said over and over again, this is not something you win by a military victory. They are trying to set up the situation for a political solution. And I think that's what the president failed to convey, because it's very hard to describe to an audience. It has a lot of moving parts. It involves Pakistan. And I think that's the unfortunate thing, because the impression is out there that this is aiming for a military victory like commanders called for in Vietnam. It's not the case. This is aiming to set up a political solution.
Jonathan Martin, I keep coming back to how this is being watched in this country and on Capitol Hill, and wondering about the level of confidence, support. Yeah. I mean, there's this divergence. Republicans kind of on board this week because he's putting in more troops, but yet not really on board. Democrats, many not on board.
Right. Well, look. I mean, I think for all the complaints from both sides members of Congress are never shy about expressing their views, both in hearings and also on television programs. Ultimately, when there is a vote on the funding, that President Obama will have the votes there for this reason. He will have a coalition of both Republicans and some Democrats who will support it, and that's going to be enough. It is very, very difficult to see how the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate would not help this president out. I think Speaker Pelosi obviously has her own concerns about this, but the political ramifications of denying him money for his chief foreign policy just doesn't seem realistic given the coordination between Senator Reid, Speaker Pelosi, and this White House.
Jack Beattie, I know you've been thinking back to another president and another war as Barack Obama wrestles with this war and this recession.
You know, he really resembles his hero, President Lincoln, in this respect. Lincoln used the crisis of the Civil War to enact the Republican domestic agenda that had been really held up by the Democrats for a generation. Transcontinental Railroad, Protective Tariff, Homestead Act, and the rest. But his reelection in 1864 was in peril right down as late as September because the war had just gone so badly for the Union. It wasn't enough for the public to get the tariff and the trans. They wanted success. It was only General Sherman's capture of Atlanta in September that turned the tide and that made Lincoln reelectable. President Obama is enacting his party's domestic program, health insurance. We got the climate legislation at least moving, Wall Street reform and so on, and, of course, the escalation in Afghanistan. But it's hard to believe that these things will save him or his party in 2010 and 2012 if unemployment, his crisis, his civil war, if it's still in this really terrible neighborhood.
Jonathan, 11,000 jobs lost last month. That is now a very small number compared to what we've seen. And the October number drawn down from 190 to 111 in their recalculation, does that show hope for the president or not on the jobs front?
It's definitely better news than they could have had today. But I'll say this, though. It's certainly remarkable when losing 11,000 jobs in a month could be interpreted as anything resembling good news. But that's the world that we're in now. But look, you've still got unemployment at 10%. It does not take a political scientist to game out what's going to happen in the midterm elections. If in October of 2010, unemployment is still at 10% or north of that figure, the Democrats are going to face the loss of quite a few seats. It's, as James Carville put in 1992, it's the economy stupid all over again. And this president, I think, is trying to sort of pivot to make the case that he's concerned about jobs. Allentown today, the job summit yesterday, going to give a major speech next week before Brookings here in Washington. They're trying to present the image of concern, of action, but they're going to have a tough time for this reason. There's so much concern about deficits and spending that's coming out of the electorate. And right now, I think it's really fueling the GOP resurgence is that issue chiefly. But you've got concerned congressional Democrats worried about their own reelection next year who are pushing for a jobs bill, effectively stimulus 2. Well, there's going to be great political pressure to do something like that in 2010 for those congressional Democrats. But doing so will only exacerbate the questions about deficit spending. So this president in a tough spot on the economy.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And in the news this week, the now infamous White House party crashers, the Salahis, defended themselves on the Today Show.
We were invited, not crashers. And there isn't anyone that would have the audacity or the poor behavior to do that.
Well, maybe not. The Tiger Woods scandal everywhere. Here's alleged tape of a message left on a mistress's cell phone.
Hey, it's Tiger. I need you to do me a huge favor. Can you please take your name off your phone? My wife went through my phone and maybe calling you.
Oh, boy. And Grammy nominations announced Wednesday with Beyonce leading the pack with 10, two more than Taylor Swift, including for Song of the Year. Jonathan Martin with Politico is with us. Trudy Rubin from the Philadelphia Inquirer and Jack Beatty. We've heard the president at West Point. Let's hear him at the White House Job Summit yesterday, talking with 130 business leaders, union chiefs, economists, talked about several proposals, including increasing the export of American-made high-tech, high-value products.
If we just increased our share of exports to Asia by 1%, that's about 250,000 jobs right there. If we increased it by 5, that's 1 million jobs. That fills a big hole. It doesn't cost us money. So we are going to be scouring federal regulations, restrictions, et cetera, that are inhibiting export growth. We're going to be trying to see if we can use the federal government to link up small business and medium-sized businesses to exports more effectively.
Exports, says the president, let's pump them up. Richard in Bellevue, Nebraska. You're on the air, Richard.
I've been looking. I'm one of the unemployed, and I've been unemployed for over a year.
Oh boy.
I'm a design engineer, and I went through one of these unemployment cycles back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, if you look at what Reagan did, everybody criticized him for it, but he went and rebuilt the military back then after it was cut to pieces by the Carter administration. These days, we don't need to rebuild the military, but, you know, now, if you look at, read the paper, NASA's screaming that they have no money for a budget to do anything, and if they take the money instead of throwing it at jobs that, you know, so-called green jobs or temp jobs and throw it at NASA, the amount of money, amount of jobs that would create from just the contractors, yeah, subcontractors, and subcontractors from them would put millions of people back to work.
So you're thinking Ronald Reagan and putting a lot of money into aerospace and all, but why the moon and why not green? Why not earth jobs, Richard?
Because most of them are temp jobs. You take, like, all right, installing solar panels on roofs. That's actually a roofing job, and it's a temp job because there's only so many people you can employ doing it, and then once you install it, it's done.
Okay, there's an awful lot of roofs out there, but we got it, and we hope you find something soon, Richard. Let me get one more right here. Jay, Medway, Massachusetts. Jay, you're on the air. Hello, Jay.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple of comments. One, I used to be a Republican many years ago, but I've switched over to being a Democrat, and I'm amazed at how effective the Republicans are at talking about the deficit when they didn't seem to care about it back when it was piling up with the Iraq War. Now it's just another tool that they use against us, and that they've convinced the American people should be used, I say used against us, but used against the president's plan. I really think we need to invest in America right now. I think a larger deficit wouldn't hurt, just like you invest in a business. You take on debt to grow the business, to grow the country, to improve infrastructure, to get us back on track. I think it's an idea that makes sense. The same thing with health care. I work for a large company. I feel blessed to have a job right now, but I have a very good health care plan. But I'm still spending thousands of dollars more every year to keep that health plan and to make it so that it works for my family. So I can see that even in a good position, I think we really need to make some changes.
So spend away and fix health care. Jonathan Martin, even the president at his job summit yesterday was cautioning our resources are limited. Jay's pointing to the GOP and saying they've got their nerve talking about deficits, you know, now, but the president himself has it on his mind, clearly.
Well, he does, and there's no question that there is a element of GOP hypocrisy on the spending argument because of what they did, not just in terms of Iraq and national security, but also if you just take, for example, the prescription drug benefit that the GOP Congress and the Republican president signed earlier this decade, something that a lot of conservatives have great heartburn and regret over now in hindsight. But that's in the past. For now, there is no question that this president is feeling the heat on the spending question and is seeing the political ramifications out there about that line of attack. That is why everything that we're hearing indicates that this administration is going to use 2010 to talk more about deficit spending, trying to sort of tighten belts. I think his speech in January to the Congress, the State of the Union speech, I think will incorporate some of that. And again, there's going to be a looming battle, though, between this administration trying to do some belt tightening because of these questions about excessive spending and a Democratic Congress that is more worried about the short-term imperative of unemployment and jobs and their own reelection next year.
He was getting pushed back a little bit at the summit yesterday. Here's some tape from a prominent Utah businessman, Fred Lampropoulos, CEO, Merit Medical. He was there and worried about the Obama legislative agenda. He addressed President Obama directly with this note of skepticism on the administration's direction.
One of the overriding thoughts in our forum was that there's uncertainty, that there's such an aggressive legislative agenda that business people don't really know what they ought to do. In fact, one CEO said that he thought he has to kind of wait and may have to restructure his business. This is a large multinational pharma company. And that uncertainty is really what's holding back the jobs.
Jack Beatty, you hear a caller say, yes, please reform health care. I can't afford what we're going with now. There's a CEO saying, oh, well, you know, don't rock the boat. We don't know what to do.
Right, right. Well, you know, there's a second president that President Obama is maybe emulating here in his talk about deficits and so on, and that's Franklin Roosevelt. I mean, it's well known now that Roosevelt's turn toward balancing the budget in 1937 or 38 essentially reinstalled the Depression. It created a sort of W recovery. And if the president, who's been sounding Hoover-esque on the economy lately, continues on that tack, and if they, you know, keep turning down spending ideas because we have a deficit, he could well emulate Roosevelt in that. I mean, you know, any Keynesian economist would say we have to run deficits now because the economy is flat. The only way it'll get back to self-sustaining growth is by federal pump priming, by continual spending and so on. And yes, that the in the out years, we have to take care of it. But the biggest problem with the deficit right now is the recession. Absent the recession, the deficit is manageable. So you have to deal with the recession paradoxically by spending.
But I thought I heard the president running the clutch, not the accelerator on that. Kaya in Aiken, South Carolina. Kaya, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love the show.
Thank you.
I just had a quick comment. I feel like the recession has just hit us down here in the past couple of months. I live in a very wealthy small town, and both my husband and I work in restaurants, and we are going to school right now. And it seems that all of a sudden the holiday season has hit, and people are not going out to eat anymore, and we're all of a sudden worried about making ends meet where there was no problem before. So it's kind of scary, really.
Are you worried about making ends meet yourself, Kaya?
Yes, absolutely. It's people just not turning out like they used to at all.
So there's the people who work in their restaurants and the people who should be patrons at their restaurants, both a little wary. It's interesting, yesterday on Capitol Hill, Ben Bernanke was there looking at his nomination for a second term under scrutiny. He got some grief for coming in heavy on the side of the banks in the early part of this crisis. Here's Senator Jim Bunning, Republican of Kentucky again, prominent among those criticizing the Fed chair, telling him, your time as Fed chairman has been a failure.
You have decided that just about every large bank, investment bank, insurance company, and even some industrial companies are too big to fail. Rather than making management, shareholders, and debt holders feel the consequences of their risk-taking, you bailed them out. In short, you are the definition of a moral hazard.
Definition of a moral hazard. That's pretty rough. Here's Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont saying, this was on MSNBC on Thursday, that Bernanke should not be renominated. He said he would plan to try and block Bernanke's nomination.
He was appointed by George W. Bush. He was part of the Bush administration. We need a new approach to Wall Street. We need Wall Street to be investing in the productive economy, creating real jobs in America. I think it's time for Mr. Bernanke to go.
And here's Mr. Bernanke himself testifying before the Senate Banking Committee yesterday. He defended his handling of the economy.
I did not anticipate a crisis of this magnitude and this severity. But given that it happened, many of the banks, but not all of them certainly, but at least some of them, were not adequately prepared in terms of their reserves, in terms of their liquidity. That is a mistake we won't make again.
a mistake we won't make again. Bank of America this week looking to pay off its TARP plans and be able to pay whatever it likes as it goes on down the road. Ted in Toronto, Canada. Ted, you're on the air.
Yes, it seems that the president is spending like a drunken sailor because on one hand, on the foreign front, they're continuing the protracted wars, Afghanistan, the surge. This is all costing lots of money. And on the domestic front, the president wants to pay for health care, create jobs. I mean, this is a guns or butter issue. I don't see how we can do both.
Ted, thanks for your call. Trudy Rubin, how about it? When you look out at that military confrontation you say is necessary, look home at the economy and the peril it's in, how do you square that circle?
You know, I think the bottom line is you decide whether a surge or a continued military operation is strategically necessary. And if you decide it is, then you have to pay for it. And if you look at the numbers, what's going to be spent on Afghanistan is peanuts compared to the overall deficit costs of the recession, the health care plan, and especially if we go forward with cap and trade. So I don't think the issue is guns or butter. The problem is that we're in a recession. That's true. But I think you have to decide if something is strategically necessary. And I'll tell you, having spent time there, I think it is. But I think the president has failed to explain that the goals, and that's what I objected to in his speech, that he didn't really make clear what we're trying to do there, that we're trying to turn the momentum so that you could have a political settlement inside Afghanistan and a regional political settlement, and so that you could get Pakistan on board. And I'm afraid the way he's going at it, he'll lose domestic support and he won't be able to get that political settlement.
You said political settlement several times, Trudy. Does that mean that bring the Taliban into the tent? What about al-Qaeda? Does that really work?
What it means is both McChrystal and supposedly Karzai are working on a reintegration scheme, a serious one, unlike the unserious one that Karzai had before.
Reintegration of Taliban.
Middle level and low level. Mm-hmm. And then the broader goal is if things shift and if in the heartland of Taliban haven in South Afghanistan you can turn the situation around, get economic development, then there is the belief that especially if the Pakistanis cooperate because they're still giving help to Afghan Taliban leaders, that you could break off some of the big Afghan Taliban, separate them from al-Qaeda. Moreover, you have to look at a regional settlement with all of Afghanistan's neighbors, and that's also an important piece.
Speaking of the region, broadly, Iran defiant this week on enriching part of his the country's stock of uranium to a higher level. Very interesting there. Also, I just happened to notice Richard Goldstone, who came out with the early UN report talking about war crimes by Israel and Palestinians in the Gaza confrontation last year. I guess that's gone nowhere in the UN, but he's got a new human rights award from the Stockholm Human Rights Award yesterday. What about on the Iran front, Trudy? Is this really stepping up the tension there? The IAEA not very happy.
Yes. And you know, unfortunately, President Obama took on everything all at once on the foreign front and on the domestic front. And it's just too much. And I think that his strategy of engagement with Iran is coming to a bumpy end, which is unfortunate because Iran is also one of the players in Afghanistan from whom you want cooperation. And in reality, we have common interests because they are anti-Taliban and anti-Al-Qaeda at base. But I think that the president is inexorably being pushed towards going for stronger sanctions because Iran just does not seem to want to cooperate even at a minimal level, which they themselves had suggested but are now reneging on.
Watch out on that front as well. Andre, Lawrence, Massachusetts. Last call, Andre. Just got a few seconds. You're on the air.
Thank you. It's outrageous. This Tiger Woods story is not a story. We've got 30,000 beautiful young men and women going to Afghanistan.
Yes, sir.
Look, even my beloved NPR, even you're covering it.
I mean, what do you mean I'm covering it? Well, it's out there. It's happening, but I don't think that's the meat of our conversation. Do you, Andre?
No, but, I mean, you played that stupid tape. You wasted a minute. You could have been talking about Afghanistan.
Okay, we gave it 10 seconds, but, Andre, thank you for your call. Jonathan Martin, I mean, it is interesting, even in the the midst of these big as it gets threats and problems and challenges, you know, people kind of looking around, kind of looking for a distraction, kind of looking for a nine-eyed distraction.
Well, sure. For comic relief.
Yeah. Well, people like human interest stories, and they're fascinated by celebrity travails. That's nothing new. It's been the case since the Lindbergh baby and perhaps before that. But we didn't even get to the gatecrashers during this whole hour, which is still captivating folks down here in the Beltway over a week after it happened. So I think NPR has been very responsible in this past hour, Tom.
we're not done with the presidential security issue. But, Jack Meaty, for all that, these are very sober times. And you could see it in the face of the president at West Point and in the faces of those beautiful young cadets in that hall. These are sober, sober times, Jack.
Yes, according to reports, the president isn't sleeping well. He's missing meals. He certainly looked haggard. And as you told me, Tom, this morning, he got up at 3 a.m. that day to talk to Karzai, and at 8 p.m. was giving the speech, and the pace and power of it showed. He was weary. It was a wearied man's decision. And yes, those faces, those young men and women and what they're facing, oh, my.
A long day for the president, long days for troops coming up.
Credit to his intelligence.
Amen to that. We will do it, and hope that it works out a very clever scenario here. We could use it. Our time is up. Trudy Rubin with the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's great to have you. Thank you for joining us today, Trudy.
You're welcome.
Jonathan Martin, senior political writer at Politico. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Jack Beatty, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.